Philip Morgan.
Listen, Witherell. How's it going?
It's going well, my friend. Philip, today, this is a special one. Do you know why?
Because I'm here.
Well, you're here every time. Although that is special. I don't want to minimize your presence.
Yeah, thank you.
But it's special for a different reason. And the reason is, this is Offline Episode 50.
Whoa. I just reached episode 100 of the Consulting Pipeline podcast not too long ago and did nothing at all to celebrate. What are we going to do to celebrate this? This is a makeup celebration for me.
I don't know. I mean, you're here, so that's celebration enough, isn't it?
I don't know. Maybe we could talk about LinkedIn again. Those episodes seem to do really well. That would be a good way to celebrate. Continue talking about LinkedIn.
Oh, goodness. Well, the people want it, Philip. The people want LinkedIn information.
People have spoken. The people in Japan, still 27% of downloads coming from Japan. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. So when Philip mentions LinkedIn, what he's referring to is that the two best performing episodes in terms of total downloads we've ever had both have LinkedIn in the title. And I was pointing out to him that this, you know, we're a podcast and essentially iTunes is a search engine. And so Philip made the suggestion that we make this entirely about LinkedIn.
I like it. We're going to have to debate that internally, though.
Well,
I'll put together a subcommittee to study the feasibility of that.
Yeah, probably won't be a long meeting.
Will you join my subcommittee?
Yeah, well, maybe we'll work it out at some point on the show. Tell me, do you have anything to promote today?
I do. It's called Specialization School. Longtime listeners may be familiar with Specialization School. I want folks who might be interested in getting help deciding how to specialize. And that's, you know, to be clear, not everybody. It would be something probably you've been thinking. You're maybe sort of sold on the idea. You just need some specific kind of tactical assistance making the decision. The next batch of specialization school workshops that are focused on that, which are the first workshop, are opening up in June. That's why I wanted to mention that. So that's coming up soon, not long from the publication date of this here episode. So if that's interesting, go to specializationschool.com. Make sure you like what you see there. And if so, there's a place to schedule a phone call with me and discuss fit. How about you, listen?
This episode of Offline brought to you by specializationschool.com.
How about you, man? You got anything that you want to promote?
I do want to promote something. So it's yet unnamed. It's yet unpriced.
I'm like, what is it?
It's yet unstructured.
It's a mystery.
It's more than a figment of my imagination, Philip.
Okay, if you say so.
And that is a specific training to help consultants and consulting business owners not lose leads, sell with process so they always know what to do next, and increase the speed of their sale. So I'm doing a training. It's 8 weeks. It's going to be very, very high touch. It's going to be a mixture of online content, videos you can watch, worksheets that you can download, group coaching sessions, live feedback, and of course, group interaction. What I really want to do is build a community of people who are all looking to improve the growth of their consulting businesses. And so if you want to be in the beta group, email me or hit me up on LinkedIn. My email is liston@liston.io. I'll be sending more information about this if you're already on my newsletter, but the first cohort will be starting on July 2nd. This is a public declaration. July 2nd is the first cohort. So if you're interested in this and you need some help with your sales process, I would love to chat with you.
Sweet.
So today, speaking of LinkedIn, So what I forgot, I don't know exactly what prompted this conversation, but we were chatting a little bit about how any way that someone is to generate leads in their business, the fruitfulness or efficacy of that channel will start to wane over time. Yep. It'll become more competitive. the word will get out. Lots of blog posts will be written on how to do X, Y, or Z in that channel. Everybody else will start doing it. Your potential customers and clients will see the same scripts over and over again, which leads to, I think, an inevitable conclusion, if you buy the premise, that as a consultant, if you want maximum control over your business and you want flexibility and you want to be able to choose your clients, you're going to need multiple lead sources.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. And, you know, here I read a book maybe a couple of years ago called The One Thing. Do you remember that?
Oh, you know, I tried reading that book and I thought it was terrible. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. I think there's some wisdom in the idea that we should do better to focus our efforts. I don't think that in your business as a consultant, you can have one single channel that accounts for everything. In most cases, I think it's very rare that people are able to do that. Yeah. So Philip, maybe we can explore a little bit. Why do we think that there's such an erosion of the quality of a lead channel?
I have some kind of wacky ideas about this. One of which is people open their damn mouth too much when something works, right? So they're like, hey, I tried this, you know, one crazy trick on LinkedIn and look at how amazing it is. And then, you know, you combine that with a bunch of desperate people who will try anything. And I think you have a recipe for sort of rapid saturation of any channel, whether it's cold email or actually I'm kind of waiting for cold calling to come back around and have some sort of resurgence, because that seems to be part of it too, is it channels get overutilized, things change, the world moves on, and then they sort of become underutilized again and ripe for re-overutilization. So anyway, I guess my point is, I think that one of the reasons why channels eventually become saturated is that people are, and to an extent, this, I'll be completely honest, this is true of myself too. We all love the idea of a magic bullet, or don't tell me the principles I need to follow and make me figure it out myself. Just tell me what to do and how to do it. I will be a good little monkey and do what you say. And you know, so you have people like Aaron Ross publishing Predictable Revenue and Steli Efti publishing his book on cold emailing, where there are some email templates provided and some suggestions about how to use them. And a year or two later, every cold email you get seems like it follows that exact same prescriptive form. So we all just want something that's, you know, plug and play, right? Easy. So I think that's part of why is we're looking for other people's models that we can just easily implement. That's my first guess as to why channels become saturated and therefore become less effective, is we're copying rather than inventing, I guess would be a way to say that.
Yeah, I think that's actually the biggest part of it. That I can think of, because it has lots of ramifications. So if we're copying, I agree, it takes no brain power to go read a blog and go, oh, I'm just going to cook that recipe a thousand times.
Right.
Right. Until I can't eat meatloaf anymore, whatever,
right.
Whatever it is. So I think that's one thing. I think also, sort of by the nature of someone publishing or a few people publishing about cold email, for instance. Mm-hmm. And now it seems like LinkedIn is kind of like starting to become very overused. Mm. When that happens, it becomes trendy and then it attracts more people. And then there's kind of this swell of people who are going, oh, I'm going to try that too. I'm going to try that too. So, you know, mutual friend of ours, Jake Jorgovan, has a business called Lead Cookie. where he does get leads for people through LinkedIn. However, he read a book about it or took a course about it and read some articles about it. And then he tried it and he's like, oh, this works so well. Maybe I'll do it for other people.
Mm-hmm.
And lots of other people we know had the same idea at the same time. And so I think there becomes not only a trend or a groundswell around that channel, but it also professionalizes the channel, right? Similar to LinkedIn, cold email is now a whole industry of people who will provide software for you to do cold email at scale. It's a whole industry of people who will write your cold emails for you, who will run your campaigns, who will retarget the people in your campaigns.
Right.
So that also lends itself to much greater scale than it would be if it were just a bunch of individual operators out mm-hmm. there doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that that's a big, big factor in what's happening. And I think we also, by definition, there's an opportunity cost in the other places. We say, well, LinkedIn, cold email, Instagram, whatever's next, this is the place, mm-hmm. right? And so you start to neglect other places. And then the attention in those places becomes a little bit cheaper.
Yeah.
And to your point, it'll start to switch back. So for instance, I would bet a lot of money that cold snail mail.
Yep, physical mail.
Written mm-hmm. physical mail would probably be a much, much more effective channel than cold email today. That would be my guess.
Yeah. I was thinking as you were saying those things, all of which I agree with, there are media or, you know, in digital marketing would call them channels, but you could call them media or form mediums that talking, using your mouth to make words, you could think of as a marketing channel, right?
Right.
And that's been around for so long that it's sort of stabilized. And I think what we're talking about is a little different. In that, well, it's more complex, right? We develop a kind of blindness. So we think about banner ads, how for a while those worked really great, and then they stopped working. And part of that was, you know, saturation. And part of that, the response to that saturation was that we all sort of developed a collective blindness to any content that was, you know, formatted as a banner at the top of a website. But there's a reason that happens, and it's because of the content. And I think maybe we should talk about that, because that's part of what I was getting at is if you're just copying somebody, there's the form and then there's the content, right? And if you're just copying both the content and the form, that's where I think the problem is. I don't have a lot of evidence to support this, but I do think that if the content is compelling and relevant, that maybe even saturated channels can work okay or can work great perhaps for reconnecting and building trust with people. But to me, it's when the content and the form are both formulaic or, you know, just repetitive or whatever. That maybe is where the problem is. What do you think about that?
Well, I think there's two separate things that need to happen to get noticed and to get leads from any channel, right? Mm-hmm. On the one hand, you need to create compelling information, offers, like whatever it is, whatever mm-hmm. you're doing to create your leads or mm-hmm. whatever your hypothesis is to create mm-hmm. your leads. You need to create that stuff mm-hmm. that people will see. But, you know, there's the hint. It doesn't matter if people don't see it. So, you know, one way, like blogging, for instance, mm-hmm. one way that blogging became tremendously overused is people would just, you know, hire bloggers to pump out articles for 20 to 50 bucks an article yeah. and say, we're not going to care about the quality. We're going to do another 7 best ways to insert keyword.
Right.
Right. And we're going to do 3 of those every single day for the next 5 years.
That feels like HubSpot's blog in a nutshell.
I agree. You know, it's interesting. People go, oh, HubSpot has the best information. I'm like, really? It's like so derivative.
Yeah, that's what I feel like too.
Yeah. So, I mean, I agree with you. I think people are, and there's a natural inclination here too, right? It's like, in order to be good at something, in order to get the notice, you have to take a second to go, okay, I'm not going to spend a bunch of time making stuff that no one's going to see. I want to make sure that I give myself the best chance of people actually seeing it, which will also influence the finished product, right?
Yeah.
So by definition, there becomes a homogenization of the content at some point because there becomes accepted sort of best practices on that channel. I'll give you an example. As I'm producing more and more LinkedIn videos, couple things that I like, I notice all kinds of things, and I can tell you more than we have time to cover in this particular recording. But for instance, if you're going to publish a video, you should have a thumbnail at the beginning, which you can't upload in LinkedIn. So I have to go in and add a picture into Adobe Premiere. Most people don't know that. You should add closed captioning because some people are listening at work and they can't listen with the sound on.
Mm-hmm.
You should have a call to action in the beginning and the end, just so that people, if they're not going to stick around the whole time, they go like and comment on your post,
mm-hmm.
right? There's all these things. And so after you see enough of these videos, you kind of go, well, LinkedIn kind of looks like this other person. And like, you know what I mean? But
I do.
I know because of, you know, I'm paying attention to what's working and what's not,
mm-hmm.
that there's an element of it that's slightly formulaic.
Sure. As there is with, you know, Game of Thrones or any, you know, TV show that has a massive audience, they use, you know, they end with cliffhangers at the end of a season. You know, so there's, that's what I mean when I say the form. And I wonder, I don't know, I'm not trying to be purposely contrarian here. I agree with the main point here, which is that these channels do become saturated, but I am interested in kind of exploring some of the nuances. You know, just because there's a form that's sort of broadly used, I don't think makes something unsuitable as a way to reach people. But I think it raises the stakes. And I think that's why a lot of, I'll include myself, a lot of us are like, crap, it's gotten harder for this to be successful.
Yes.
Because we were all playing it on easy mode, you know, 6 months ago.
Well, that's exactly, yeah, you stole my thunder a little bit.
Oh, sorry, man.
no worries. But like, you know, LinkedIn video or television or whatever it is, these rules develop. The audience has an expectation about what they're going to see, right? And so that becomes the minimum requirement now to participate.
Right. Right.
And if you want to stand out, you got to do better than that. And that's exactly what I see happening on LinkedIn right now. And blogging, it's, you know, now it's sort of like, well, if you really want a thriving content marketing practice, you need a distribution channel. And for a lot of companies, they're like, we ain't got time for that. We're just going to pay for it, right? That's why account-based marketing is so huge. It's like, you've already invested 3 years in this content. Guess what? No one's seeing it. So why don't you just pay to put it in front of the right people and it'll work?
Yeah, I think about the early days of content marketing. You know, a lot of what we're talking about really is like, that's the context, is we're talking about sort of DIY forms of content marketing that a small business owner could do themselves. And I think about the early days of content marketing, and what was so glorious about it was that you could do exactly what I just said. You know, a small business owner, some pool cleaning company, or you know, a pizza joint, or people like us, you know, solo professional services firms, could cook up some content marketing, and it was effective and it would work, and we could do it essentially as amateurs. And
right.
That's what was so wonderful. And part of what I think we're saying is, the bar has been raised, and just, you know, anything that you fart out that looks like content marketing is not necessarily going to be good enough. It's not necessarily going to be effective. And that's frustrating. I'm now kind of making a connection to my people, the people I serve, software developers. And they experience something similar when there's some new technology. Like think about when iOS, when Apple released the ability to the SDK for iOS, and you could build apps for iPhones.
Right.
That opened up this new territory where some, jack-off could learn programming and learn iOS software development and make six figures, like with no marketing whatsoever and very little in the form of business discipline. And then over time, that skill set becomes commoditized. And that same person who's now like used to making freaking great money, can't make the best of that money anymore because the rates have gone down. And it's frustrating when that happens. And I see a sort of parallel with content marketing where it just sort of feels like that's what's happening is you have to be better at it than just the average Joe. Mm-hmm. Because it's the whole thing is becoming saturated.
Yeah, and of course, the more recent example I think is happening in real time right now is, of course, blockchain and especially cryptocurrency is sort of like that next.
Investors are throwing money at anybody who's got a halfway reasonable idea for a company. And, that's not going to last.
Right, right. So let's assume we've made the case strong enough that the difficulty of any lead generation channel continually increases over time. The difficulty of doing it well and being effective at it.
Yeah.
Well, unless you want, at the same time, you spent all this, let's say whatever your channel is. So like I've been doing content marketing in various forms for like 7 years.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I don't want to throw all of that information out. Like those are still very valuable skills.
Yeah.
And I'm still probably better at it than the vast majority of the business world.
Yeah.
Right. But what do we do next?
Yeah. Knowing right. How do we solve this problem?
Right. Knowing that any lead generation channel that we use today will eventually become more competitive and decay in its effectiveness, all things being equal.
Right. Yeah. Let's say that another part of that is that the content quality going into the channel, whether you're producing it or your competitors are, I think we're saying if that doesn't change, then you see less and less good results from it.
Right. Let's say you write an article and we can do the thought experiment where you publish it for the first time every year.
Mm-hmm.
Each year it's going to become less effective,
right?
All things being equal.
Yeah. I think it's important to point that out. So obviously like part of the solution is upping your game, but I think that we have to think about this in the context of other businesses like ourselves, which is our presumed audience here. Other businesses like ourselves, I think have to make a choice, which is, okay, if what I was doing before is now considered mediocre, it wasn't 2-3 years ago. It was good 2-3 years ago, but now the exact same stuff is mediocre or bad. I don't know, somewhere between there. Then I think what you have to say is, okay, now I have to do two scary things. I have to get better, and maybe I have to focus or concentrate and do less so that I can do better. I don't know. What do you think? Like that seems to me maybe part of this is a conscious decision to, if you're going to do better, how are you going to do that? One way would be to reduce the scope of what you do.
I'm not sure I'm totally following. So what would that look like to reduce the scope of what you do?
Well, if you were publishing video and writing blog posts and sending emails to a list, you're doing three things.
Uh-huh.
Maybe you're doing two or one thing now so you can do it better.
Oh, interesting. So I would have the opposite conclusion that you would.
Oh, good. Right? Okay. This will be interesting.
Yeah. So we don't disagree. We don't agree. My conclusion would be that you're going to need more lead sources. I mean, obviously it's not, there's a limit to it. I mean, there's no doubt about that. You don't have infinite time. Neither do I, neither does Philip, but I do believe that you're going to need to be running a few things concurrently. And especially the value in that is to understand which of those are paying off more or less.
Okay. So you're saying you need to diversify and start including more channels in.
I am. Okay. So like, I'll give you an example for me, right? I'm producing videos on LinkedIn. I've started to dip my toes into YouTube, but I'm starting to wonder if maybe I should hold off on that until I'm sort of more established on LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. I have my weekly email newsletter. I'm publishing less and less on my website. Mm-hmm. Because I think there's ways to leverage the other content that I'm creating rather than creating new stuff for my website. Mm-hmm. I'm creating webinars that I give on a pretty regular basis.
Nice.
I've been recording my own podcast in the background, so I'm doing a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to do it all essentially for the same reasons, which is to either grow an audience, grow partners, or generate leads. Those are the only three goals I have.
Yeah.
And they're all related, I would say. So yeah, and you know, the obvious thing that's going to happen there is one, two, or three of them, this is to your point, will start to become more obviously leading the pack. And then you start to go, well, I should either hire someone to take this over, or I'm just not going to do it or do less of it. But I don't think you can get to that conclusion until you're doing many different things. And you can't do them simultaneously in the beginning. You need to choose one or two.
Yeah.
Do it. And then 3 months later go, well, did that work? But I think the biggest problem I see with the lead gen channel decay problem is easy for you to say, is people will produce a blog post, or they'll work on their website for a month and a half and go, this isn't converting, it's pointless. And I'm like, well, who the hell do you think you are? Like, it's gonna, you know, I think we've talked about Gary Vee and poked fun at him in various ways, but this notion that you need to eat shit for a while, I do agree with that, because it's like, no one knows who you are. Like, you have no real right to expect that 3 or 6 months is going to be like this life-changing thing. It can happen, but usually not. Usually it takes years to really build something worth paying attention to.
Right. Okay. So now I have a little more context for where you're coming from. Is it fair to say you're advocating, okay, you do diversify, but those are all sort of medium-term experiments. So we might think of short-term as a couple months, medium-term as 3, 6, 12 months maybe, and long-term is longer than that. And so you're saying do some medium-term experiments in parallel? Is that what you're suggesting, or would you try them
serially? That's what I would do, yeah.
Okay, so you try them in parallel. So you know that you're going to have a sort of intense year of experimentation. And out of that, you might pick a few winning channels where there's just this nice combination of what you're naturally good at or what you're able to do and what the channel seems to like. And you're going to go with that and maybe, you know, start some new experiments so that you're always hedging your bets. So, but really there is a sort of focus on the best performing channels, but it comes out of an experimentation phase. Is that about right?
Yeah. And I think continually replacing the worst performing channel with the next one where you think, I'm actually listening to Gary Vee's book right now on the recommendation of a friend.
Which one?
His latest one, Crushing It.
Okay.
Quite the title. However, I got to say, listening to him, like, you either have to be fired up or you're like absolutely repelled.
Yeah.
There can't be any in between there.
Yeah.
But one of the points he makes, and I think it's a good one, is basically the currency of lead generation is attention, right? Because if we can agree with the premise, like, no one can act on my content if they don't see it.
Mm-hmm.
And so therefore, like, the precursor for anything to happen is attention.
Mm-hmm.
He talks about like always looking for where attention is on sale in your market. And that's what, you know, the way I would say it is I'd look for, of the four or five things I'm doing, what's the thing that's the worst?
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going to throw that out and I'm going to try to replace it with something else. And see if that does anything for me.
Mm. Yeah. 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 I mean, it's interesting to me that most of the channels we're talking about are ones that are incredibly new. I mean, they're almost.
Sure. Well, we didn't even talk about Facebook Messenger yet.
Yeah. Right. You know, I don't know. I saw someone promoting, oh, what's that guy's name? Mixer G, Andrew Warner's bot course recently.
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought, oh my gosh, is that? You know, when I saw that come out maybe a year or so ago, and I was like, I wonder how long this is going to last before something changes, you know, in the back end algorithm that makes this, you know, untenable, or I don't know. So I don't really know. But yeah, you're right. But my point is, there are channels that have been around for a long time, like television and print, and I feel like we don't really have the same kind of conversations about those. There seems to be something about these brand new channels where they just get saturated so fast that you almost wonder if it's worth it to even try, you know?
Well, I think it's pretty established, though. So, like, with television, right? We have 100 years we can reflect on.
Yeah.
And of course it's changing now with programmatic advertising and, like, you know, basically, like, I can see if more people in a certain zip code consume my online content and then show them commercials, something like that.
But, right.
And of course it'll get to the point where no two people watching the show will see the same set of commercials. Like,
yeah.
Unless GDPR really becomes the world practice.
Yeah,
right. That's going to happen pretty quickly.
Sure, yeah.
But with television, for instance, like, who does television work for? National and international brands that appeal to anybody that are sort of consumer oriented.
Right.
Or local brands, right? Like when I watch the Blazers game here, my local basketball team, I still see Damian Lillard, the star of my team, selling stoves at the appliance store. Yep.
Mattresses, stoves, car, exactly. Car dealers. Yeah.
Yes. Right.
Yeah.
Because I'm here. I'm part of the market because of where I physically am.
Right.
So I think that all of these new channels are a little bit like the Wild West, and they're also much more accessible to try out.
Right.
So for me to shoot and air a television commercial, I guess, is at least like a $5,000 experiment.
I have never checked the price, but I got to think it's at least, if not closer to 10, at the lowest level of like local cable TV or whatever.
Right. Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whereas if I wanted to try LinkedIn marketing, cold email, like the barriers are pretty close to zero. I mean, you can do these in the hundreds of dollars.
Yeah. Do you think there's any difference between channels that are a platform where you're kind of, you know, like you're going there and the people you're trying to reach are going there versus things like email or like text message marketing, for example, where there's less of an intermediary? There's still some kind of intermediary, but less so than Facebook, than LinkedIn, than Instagram. And when I mean, obviously there is a difference, but I mean,
yeah,
like a difference that matters to this conversation.
Well, I think the relative risk is much higher when there's an intermediary.
Sure.
Yeah. And it really depends on how you're using it. But, you know, with Facebook, like, I have a friend who works for a company that makes chatbot automation software,
mm-hmm,
for Facebook Messenger. And I'd always ask him, like, aren't you concerned that Facebook will just shut you down one day?
Mm-hmm.
The problem that Facebook has, they have two problems, and they're called Amazon and Google. And they don't have they don't have a good way of beating either one of them, in my opinion, in the long run, because social networks in some sense are a trend, which is, you know, it's like, that's why I think LinkedIn, I would bet on the longer term. So I think you need to evaluate what are the goals of that platform and what is the outlook. But, you know, you and I both know plenty of people who survived almost exclusively on buying email addresses off of Facebook for, you know, a quarter each, 25 mm-hmm. cents. And those days are gone.
Yeah.
Right. Now a good purchase price for an email address, meaning someone voluntarily turns over their email in exchange for whatever your offer is.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, maybe $1.50 or $2.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's just naturally going to happen. I think, you know, email isn't totally without an intermediary unless you build your own email service provider and server. Because even like I'm on G Suite, they could technically deny me access to sending emails. I could switch, of course, but my domain would already be hurt.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think that the notion that we live in a world where we're in total control over everything is just wrong. I think we have more control over the channels that don't rely on an intermediary like LinkedIn or Facebook. I do agree with that for sure. Well, what do you think? What's your thought on the subject?
I think it just compounds the difficulty of doing what we're trying to do. And you know, maybe like you use lead generation, I tend to gravitate towards just, you know, connecting and building trust with people. They're not different things. I mean, lead generation, I guess, is a subset of that. And just it the difficulty of those tasks are compounded when you're dealing with some sort of man, wizard behind the curtain who is saying, well, we really like the fact that you're using video because we want people to spend more time on our platform, and video accomplishes that for us. Right. So we're going to give you a little bit of a tailwind to help you out, right? And then something changes at, you know, in their plans for the future, or they're like, wow, video is really saturated. We're seeing people, you know, the segment that engages a lot of video, we're seeing them actually spend less time on our platform. Time to, you know, and now all of a sudden you got a headwind if video was. So in general, this is just part of my personality. It's part of how I think about business. I hate the idea that it's wrong to call these things assets, but if you're DIYing this stuff, you are building up skill or competence in something, whether it's writing good marketing emails or getting engagement on Facebook or creating, you know, videos that people like to watch on LinkedIn. Those are all skills, and I just hate to see the value of skills be corroded by stupid stuff. So,
well,
yeah.
Can I talk about that for a second?
I think you're going to tell me you're not really going to like the world that's coming down the pipe. But anyway, yeah, please.
Well, I'm not going to say that. What I am going to say is, you know, if I become one of the best LinkedIn video creators, right? Mm-hmm. Well, what does that mean? That means I know how to make really engaging short videos. I foresee that as being a valuable skill that is portable, right? Now, maybe I won't be able to reach my exact LinkedIn audience in the same way that I could before. But I don't think that you should completely say no to a particular channel to, and I agree, it is about building trust and relationships, but I'm trying to use language, hopefully, that everybody understands, which is lead generation.
You're just using SEO friendly language. It's fine. No, I'm just
using what?
SEO friendly language. It's fine. I'm just giving you a hard time.
I'm not.
Giving you a hard time. Please continue. Yes, you're right. There is a portability to that skill. And to me, that raises another interesting question. Would your audience follow you? Let's say that you built up this audience of, you know, quote unquote, raving fans.
Yeah.
And I do think you have fans. Like, you know, what you're I hear it from people. They're like, oh yeah. I mean, I don't know if you know this. I don't think I've shared this with you, but like there's people who say, you know, blah, blah, blah. Liston's most recent video was so great. So you do have people who really appreciate what you're doing and they think it's something unique and valuable. So here's an interesting thought experiment. If whatever platform they were your audience on, Facebook, LinkedIn, you know, whatever, if that just like disappeared tomorrow, would they try to seek you out someplace else?
Well, speaking of SEO, luckily there aren't many Liston Witherells in the world, so I have that going for me. I'd be easy to find. I think a small subset would. I don't think I'm at the point where like I'd be bulletproof. Like we talked about Gary Vee, like I'm pretty sure if a channel shut him out, he'd be fine. Right.
Right.
It would be a blow though. You know, if all of a sudden he got kicked off of Facebook, I mean, that would be a blow. One way that I try to deal with that is give the people most interested in getting the most information from me and really following me closely. I do want them on my email list because I more or less own that channel. Right. Yeah. I own the people. I don't own people, but I own the information that's in my database.
Yeah.
And they've all given me permission to communicate with them on a regular basis. And so, you know, obviously like that will never be something that I cut from my mix.
Right. Right.
Because I have permanent access to email, but you know, I think the point I wanted to make earlier is basically you're saying, well, I don't want to go on LinkedIn because they could change the algorithm and all the things I'm good at now become unimportant on that channel. And you're right about that. Well, however.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I would add some nuance to that, but please go ahead. Yeah.
Go ahead. I
was just going to say it's a sort of negative weighting factor, meaning it's like when I'm looking at the big picture, I think, geez, that's something that could happen. It's just a reason to be cautious, I guess is what I'm saying. I'm not saying I would or would not, but it's a reason to be cautious. Please go ahead.
Yes, you're right. I agree with that. However, like the more I'm on there, the more I realize, like I did a webinar earlier this year with you and I did one with Kai Davis and I did one with our friend Rob Williams at Let's Workshop. Yeah. Shout out to Rob. And that's awesome. I reached in those three workshops, I don't know, 300 people. And obviously that's of a very high quality,
right.
The reach of those people seeing me in those places, giving me their email address, and I'm now able to email them. Very high quality. But 3 days a week on LinkedIn, I can publish a video and reach at least 2,000 people in each video. I don't have another channel that gives me that kind of reach.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
I also would say when I go in there and I comment on other people's posts and I cross-promote them and I mention them on my posts and other people, you know, I can give to other people the value that I've built, which is eyeballs on my content.
Right.
Right? Like there's lots of really important reasons to continue to do that. Even if they changed. And I guess my hunch is if I can stay there long enough and build up enough fans that if I had to leave, I would have thousands of people who still want to pay attention to me, whatever the next incarnation is.
Yeah. And I bring that up, like, would your fans, whatever you want to call them, your most committed members of your audience,
Listomaniacs is what I want to call them.
Oh, that's what I want to call them for now and forevermore. Would your Listomaniacs follow you is a sort of litmus test to me that's less about the platform and more about the quality of what it is that you're publishing. And I don't know, man, I guess I'm a little, a bit of a monomaniac when it comes to that, because that's what I seem to keep coming back to is, maybe, like, I don't disagree that you could probably, in the early days at least, going to have to do some experimentation to figure out, do you have some sort of combination of abilities and stuff that feels natural to you, plus a particular platform that really works well for you? And I think you do have, I agree completely. You've got to do experimentation to figure that out. But once you figure that out, then I do think it's a legitimate question. You're saying ongoing experimentation, diversify your lead gen sources so it's not all on one platform. And I'm saying, I'm not so sure. I think maybe that could be okay to have it focused on one or two platforms, let's say. But then you're thinking the way you hear me talking, which is very risk averse, I think is my position here, right? It's pretty risk averse. Uh-huh. Like, ooh, I don't like the idea that, you know, things could change overnight on any third-party platform, but yet we still have to use those. We still have to use those platforms. Otherwise, we're reliant on some, you know, crappy PHP list software that you're running on a server. We're basically in the Richard Stallman position of, well, I don't trust anybody unless they are completely 100% transparent, which very few of these big companies are. And that's an untenable position as well. So, do you know who Richard Stallman is?
No.
Okay. Look him up. You'll be entertained, I promise. You don't have to look it up now, but sometime in the future.
I want to.
Look up Richard Stallman. He's a polarizing, interesting guy for sure, but he's
a nice beard.
His position is, like, I think, completely untenable in the modern world.
Which is what, to give away your software for free?
He believes that he's not going to use any piece of technology that he can't see the source code for.
It sounds like utopia. He's probably also a communist.
He's got that Rasputin beard. Anyway, I don't disagree with much of what you're saying. Everything I think about is tempered by the fact that the people I work with, they're pretty limited in their ability to market across more than one or two channels, I think is kind of the bottom line. And that sort of constrains my thinking.
Yeah. So in my opinion, that's a little bit of a different conversation. Because my question always, because I hear a lot of people who go, man, I really need to transform my business. I'm not getting enough leads. I want way more sales.
Yeah.
And I say, okay, well, how much time do you have to put into it now? And they're like, 2 hours a week.
How much time do they need, in your opinion? Like 20 hours a week or so?
At least 2 hours a day, okay. Minimum.
Yeah.
So my opinion is, again, this Gary Vee book, I keep referencing it because it's so fresh. Like, I was literally just driving to REI to get a new hiking backpack and listening to it.
Yeah.
And, his stance is, if you want to be mega rich and mega successful, you should be working all your waking hours, more or less. I'm exaggerating a little bit, but that's essentially his message.
Yeah.
I don't agree with that, but I do think that if you're in a competitive area, which almost certainly you are if you're listening to this podcast right now, you're going to need to do a little bit more than other people, right? Because other people have your dream too. So why do you deserve it? And so when I think about someone who's not able to market and sell for at least 2 hours a day, I don't see how you're ever going to get the amount of awareness that you want to create enough demand where you can control your prices and say no to lots of people, right? Because that's really what it's going to take. Obviously, throughout that process, you're increasing your value over and over again. But if I hear from someone, well, I only have 2 hours a week to do this, I'm kind of like, well, like, how bad do you want it? Maybe one of the problems is, and usually this is the case, you're either taking on too much work or you're not charging enough. Mm. And often some combination of the two. You're taking on too much work because you're not charging enough. Or you want to, you're trying to pocket $10,000 every month and not reinvest anything in your business. Yeah. Like, that's also pretty much an untenable position.
Yeah.
If you really want to grow.
Yeah. I'm with you. I mean, I'm sympathetic for people who are in that position because it's a tough one to get out of. You know, it's you're sort of like, okay, I want to make things better, but I don't have any extra gas to put into the machine to make things better with. That's the feeling, and something has to give for, right. You know, it's sort of like otherwise, at best, it'll be status quo, and at worst, the sort of entropy takes over. You have to have some kind of additional energy to put into the system. And, you know, when I started out freelancing, I had heard the advice, you can't really plan on billing more than half the hours you work.
But, yeah, that's usually what I tell people, is to try to reserve 50% of your time.
No one ever told me what the other 50% was supposed to be used for. I thought it was just for, you know, like bullshit admin tasks. No, it's marketing. That's what the other 50, I mean, that's what the
lion's share. Yeah, it's marketing and selling and nurturing your relationships and business development and
Yeah, I don't know what I thought it was for, but I didn't know that it was for marketing. And I thought marketing was, you know, going to meetups like we talked about last week. So,
right.
Anyway, I got to go here in 3 minutes. You're probably more right than I am. I'm probably more idealistic than you are. But we leave it at that for now.
All right, man. Well, if in the future you want to look back and really go full in on making this the LinkedIn offline podcast, I'll be ready, Philip.
I figured you would be. So that's our plan B. If
no, I don't mean that, because you would quit, I think, if we did that.
I'm going to have to think on that one. As Merlin Mann says, I'm going to have to pray on that.
Sweet.
See you later, buddy.
Happy 50th, man.
Thanks. You too.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.